Chapter 2. Veins swollen, and beads of perspiration stood upon his brow. What's happened to him? Said several. An apoplectic fit, said the doctor from Evershead, gravely. He was only called in at the court for small ailments, as a rule, and felt the importance of the situation. He lifted the squire's head, loosened his cravat and clothing, and rang for the servants, who took the squire upstairs. There he lay, as if in a drugged sleep. The surgeon drew a basin full of blood from him, but it was nearly 6 o'clock before he came to himself. The dinner was completely disorganized, and some had gone home long ago, but two or three remained. Bless my soul, Baxby kept repeating, I didn't know things had come to this pass between Dornell and his lady. I thought the feast he was spreading today was in honor of the event, though privately kept for the present. His little maid married without his knowledge. As soon as the squire recovered consciousness he gasped. 'Tis abduction. 'Tis a capital felony. He can be hung. Where is Baxby? I am very well now. What items have he heard, Baxby? The bearer of the untoward news, was extremely unwilling to agitate Dornell further, and would say little more at first. But an hour after, when the squire had partially recovered, and was sitting up, Baxby told as much as he knew, the most important particular being that Betty's mother was present at the marriage, and showed every mark of approval. Everything appeared to have been done so regularly that I, of course, thought you knew all about it, he said. I knew no more than the underground dead, that such a step was in the wind. A child not yet 13. How Sue hath outwitted me. Did Rainer go up to London with him, do you know? I can't say. All I know, is that your lady and daughter were walking along the street, with the footman behind them, that they entered a jeweler's shop, where Reynard was standing, and that there, in the presence of the shopkeeper and your man, who was called in on purpose, your Betty said to Reynard, so the story goes. 'Pon my soul I don't vouch for the truth of it,' she said, 'will you marry me? Or, I want to marry you. Will you have me now or never?' she said. What she said means nothing, murmured the squire, with wet eyes. Her mother put the words into her mouth, to avoid the serious consequences that would attach to any suspicion of force. The words be not the child's. She didn't dream of marriage, how should she, poor little maid? Go on. Well, be that as it will, they were all agreed apparently. They bought the ring on the spot, and the marriage took place at the nearest church within half an hour. A day or two later there came a letter from Mrs. Dornell to her husband, written before she knew of his stroke. She related the circumstances of the marriage in the gentlest manner, and gave cogent reasons and excuses for consenting to the premature union, which was now an accomplished fact indeed. As he had no idea, till sudden pressure was put upon her, that the contract was expected to be carried out so soon, but being taken half unawares, as he had consented, having learned that Stephen Reynard, now their son-in-law, was becoming a great favorite at court, and that he would in all likelihood have a title granted him before long. No harm could come to their dear daughter by this early marriage contract, seeing that her life would be continued under their own eyes, exactly as before, for some years. In fine, as he had felt that no other such fair opportunity for a good marriage with a shrewd courtier and wise man of the world, who was at the same time noted for his excellent personal qualities, was within the range of probability, owing to the rusticated lives they led at King's Hintock. Hence as he had yielded to Stephen's solicitation, and hoped her husband would forgive her. She wrote, in short, like a woman who, having had her way, as to the deed, is prepared to make any concession, as to words and subsequent behavior. All this Dornell took at its true value, or rather, perhaps, at less than its true value. As his life depended upon his not getting into a passion, he controlled his perturbed emotions as well as he was able, going about the house sadly and utterly unlike his former self. He took every precaution to prevent his wife knowing of the incidents of his sudden illness, from a sense of shame at having a heart so tender, a ridiculous quality, no doubt, in her eyes, now that as he had become so imbued with town ideas. But rumors of his seizure somehow reached her, and she let him know that she was about to return to nurse him. He thereupon packed up, and went off to his own place at Falls Park. Here he lived the life of a recluse for some time. He was still too unwell to entertain company, or to ride to hounds or elsewhere. But more than this, his aversion to the faces of strangers and acquaintances, who knew by that time of the trick his wife had played him, operated to hold him aloof. Nothing could influence him to censure Betty for her share in the exploit. He never once believed that as he had acted voluntarily. Anxious to know how she was getting on, he dispatched the trusty servant Tupcombe to Evershead Village, close to King's Hintock, timing his journey so that he should reach the place under cover of dark. The emissary arrived without notice, being out of livery, and took a seat in the chimney corner of the Sow and Acorn. The conversation of the droppers in was always of the 9 days' wonder, the recent marriage. The smoking listener learned that Mrs. Dornell and the girl had returned to King's Hintock for a day or two, that Reynard had set out for the continent, and that Betty had since been packed off to school. She did not realize her position as Reynard's child wife, so the story went, and though somewhat awe-stricken at first by the ceremony, as he had soon recovered her spirits on finding that her freedom was in no way to be interfered with. After that, formal messages began to pass between Dornell and his wife, the latter being now as persistently conciliating as she was formerly masterful. But her rustic, simple, blustering husband still held personally aloof. Her wish to be reconciled, to win his forgiveness for her stratagem, moreover, a genuine tenderness and desire to soothe his sorrow, which welled up in her at times, brought her at last to his door at Falls Park one day. They had not met since that night of altercation, before her departure for London and his subsequent illness. She was shocked at the change in him. His face had become expressionless, as blank as that of a puppet, and what troubled her still more was that she found him living in one room, and indulging freely in stimulants, in absolute disobedience to the physician's order. The fact was obvious, that he could no longer be allowed to live thus uncouthly. So she sympathized, and begged his pardon, and coaxed. But though after this date there was no longer such a complete estrangement as before, they only occasionally saw each other, Dornell for the most part making Falls his headquarters still. 3 or 4 years passed thus. Then she came one day, with more animation in her manner, and at once moved him by the simple statement that Betty's schooling had ended, as he had returned, and was grieved, because he was away. As he had sent a message to him in these words: "Ask father to come home to his dear Betty. ... Then she is very unhappy," said Squire Dornell. His wife was silent. "'Tis that accursed marriage," continued the squire. Still his wife would not dispute with him. "She is outside in the carriage," said Mrs. Dornell gently. "What, Betty?" "Yes. Why didn't you tell me?" Dornell rushed out, and there was the girl awaiting his forgiveness, for she supposed herself, no less than her mother, to be under his displeasure. Yes, Betty had left school, and had returned to King's Hintock. She was nearly 17, and had developed to quite a young woman. She looked not less a member of the household for her early marriage contract, which she seemed, indeed, to have almost forgotten. It was like a dream to her, That clear, cold March day, the London Church, with its gorgeous pews, and green baize linings, and the great organ in the West Gallery so different from their own little church in the shrubbery of King's Hintock Court, the man of 30, to whose faces he had looked up with so much awe, and with a sense that he was rather ugly and formidable. The man whom, though they corresponded politely, as he had never seen since, one to whose existence she was now so indifferent, that if informed of his death, and that she would never see him more, she would merely have replied, "Indeed." Betty's passions as yet still slept. "Hast heard from thy husband lately?" said Squire Dornell, when they were indoors, with an ironical laugh of fondness which demanded no answer. The girl winced, and he noticed that his wife looked appealingly at him. As the conversation went on, and there were signs that Dornell would express sentiments that might do harm to a position which they could not alter, Mrs. Dornell suggested that Betty should leave the room till her father and herself had finished their private conversation, and this Betty obediently did. Dornell renewed his animadversions freely. "Did you see how the sound of his name frightened her?" He presently added. "If you didn't, I did. Zounds! What a future is in store for that poor little unfortunate wench o' mine! I tell 'ee, Sue, 'twas not a marriage at all, in morality, and if I were a woman in such a position, I shouldn't feel it as one. She might, without a sign of sin, love a man of her choice as well now, as if she were chained up to no other at all. There, that's my mind, and I can't help it. Ah, Sue, my man was best. He'd ha suited her." "I don't believe it," she replied incredulously. "You should see him, then you would. He's growing up a fine fellow, I can tell 'ee."
Hush, not so loud.
She answered, rising from her seat and going to the door of the next room, whither her daughter had bedecked herself. To Mrs. Dornell's alarm, there sat Betty in a reverie, her round eyes fixed on vacancy, musing so deeply that she did not perceive her mother's entrance. As he had heard every word, and was digesting the new knowledge. Her mother felt that Falls Park was dangerous ground for a young girl of the susceptible age, and in Betty's peculiar position, while Dornell talked and reasoned thus, she called Betty to her, and they took leave. The squire would not clearly promise to return and make King's Hintock Court his permanent abode, but Betty's presence there, as at former times, was sufficient to make him agree to pay them a visit soon. All the way home Betty remained preoccupied and silent. It was too plain to her anxious mother that Squire Dornell's free views had been a sort of awakening to the girl. The interval before Dornell redeemed his pledge to come and see them was unexpectedly short. He arrived one morning about 12 o'clock, driving his own pair of black bays in the curricle phaeton with yellow panels and red wheels, just as he had used to do, and his faithful old Tupcombe on horseback behind. A young man sat beside the squire in the carriage, and Mrs. Dornell's consternation could scarcely be concealed when, abruptly entering with his companion, the squire announced him as his friend Phelipson of Elm Cranlynch. Dornell passed on to Betty in the background and tenderly kissed her. "Sting your mother's conscience, my maid," he whispered. "Sting her conscience by pretending you are struck with Phelipson, and would ha loved him, as your old father's choice, much more than him as he has forced upon thee." The simple-souled speaker fondly imagined that it was entirely in obedience to this direction that Betty's eyes stole interested glances at the frank and impulsive Phelipson that day at dinner, and he laughed grimly within himself to see how this joke of his, as he imagined it to be, was disturbing the peace of mind of the lady of the house. "Now Sue sees what a mistake as he has made," said he. Mrs. Dornell was verily greatly alarmed, and as soon as she could speak a word with him alone she upbraided him. "You ought not to have brought him here. Oh, Thomas, how could you be so thoughtless? Lord,
Don't you see, dear, that what is done cannot be undone, and how all this foolery jeopardizes her happiness with her husband? Until you interfered, and spoke in her hearing about this Phillipson, she was as patient, and as willing as a lamb, and looked forward to Mr. Rangert's return with real pleasure. Since her visit to Falls Park, he has been monstrous close-mouthed, and busy with her own thoughts. What mischief will you do? How will it end? Apostrophe, own, then, that my man was best suited to her. I only brought him to convince you. Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, yes, I do admit it. But oh, do take him back again at once. Don't keep him here. I fear she is even attracted by him already. Apostrophe, nonsense, Sue. Tis only a little trick to tease. Apostrophe, nevertheless her motherly eye was not so likely to be deceived as his, and if Betty were really only playing at being love-struck that day, she played at it with the perfection of a Rosalind, and would have deceived the best professors into a belief that it was no counterfeit. The squire, having obtained his victory, was quite ready to take back the too attractive youth, and early in the afternoon they set out on their return journey. A silent figure who rode behind them was as interested as Dornell in that day's experiment. It was the staunch Tupcombe, who, with his eyes on the squire's and young Phillipson's backs, thought how well the latter would have suited Betty, and how greatly the former had changed for the worse during these last 2 or 3 years. He cursed his mistress as the cause of the change. After this memorable visit to prove his point, the lives of the Dornell couple flowed on quietly enough for the space of a twelvemonth, the squire for the most part remaining at Falls, and Betty passing and repassing between them now and then, once or twice alarming her mother by not driving home from her father's house till midnight. The repose of King's Hintock was broken by the arrival of a special messenger. Squire Dornell had had an access of gout so violent as to be serious. He wished to see Betty again. Why had she not come for so long? Mrs. Dornell was extremely reluctant to take Betty in that direction too frequently, but the girl was so anxious to go, her interests latterly seeming to be so entirely bound up in Falls Park and its neighborhood, that there was nothing to be done but to let her set out and accompany her. Squire Dornell had been impatiently awaiting her arrival. They found him very ill and irritable. It had been his habit to take powerful medicines to drive away his enemy, and they had failed in their effect on this occasion. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.